Are we recording? Yes.
We are recording. Excellent.
John, give us a test.
I have no headphones, so hopefully this sounds all right.
It sounds okay to me.
Welcome to episode 3 of The Purple Fringe, the show where we discuss the high end of the low end digital media production equipment.
So, Chris, you've been a busy man. So we're back with the Purple Fringe. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been flat out. I've done 44 interviews since the last show.
Right.
That's a lot of interviews. That's a lot of moving lights around and setting things up. And
yeah.
Oh my God, I'm surprised I'm still standing. But it's been fun. It's been really good. A lot of on the run stuff, just thinking on my feet as well. And I've had a really good time. Just poking, you know, at things like where suddenly there's 3 people turn up and you have to suddenly mic 3 people up and get them all ready to go, and you've got 15 minutes before you, you know.
Yeah, you need to do it.
It's amazing. But it's been a good learning experience and a real test for some bits of equipment. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, speaking of bits of equipment, today we're just going to focus mainly on the news because it has been a little while since we last caught up. So there's been a few things happening in the industry.
There's been a lot going on. It's been an amazing time to be around, especially with some of the... It's hitting the point now where the intellectual property of companies, they've got this high-end stuff that they're just realizing to compete, they're going to have to actually introduce it into the lower-end spec stuff for a cheaper price. And what's starting to come out lens-wise...
Well, it's starting to mature as well. I think the 4K stuff is starting to mature. A lot of the SLRs are really starting to mature. So, look, it's exciting times and... Yeah, there's been quite a lot of still camera stuff that's happened over the last couple of weeks, but also some video camera news from Sony, which I know you'll be eager to get to a little bit later.
Brilliant.
So
let's hit the banger, John, that you've been wanting to talk about forever.
Well, we sort of talked about rumors last episode. Now it's more official, and that's the Canon 1D Mark II, so their flagship model. Finally been announced, not released yet, but announced. So some of the specs of this new camera, first thing is built-in GPS, which I guess makes a lot of sense in many respects because it is a camera that's used for wildlife photography and sports photography. Maybe not so much for the sports photography, but definitely for the wildlife photography. The GPS could be a useful function to have built-in rather than the very expensive Canon add-ons of the past. One of the interesting things, and there's rumors for the replacement for the 5D to have this as well, is the memory it's using. So it's using one compact flash, but also one CFast card, which is great because you can get half a gigabyte a second in terms of write speeds. However, they're still a bit pricey from what I've seen, Chris.
Yeah, they are quite pricey. But look, memory cards are always one of the things. They've got a short lifespan, I suppose, in the fact that they double every couple of years.
Mm.
But when you look at it compared to the cost of a lens or something like that, I mean, it's something that you use all the time.
Yeah.
And generally, I've always had the view of get at least one fast, ridiculously good card and spend $300 or whatever you need to spend on that card, and you'll never regret it. I mean, just having the transfer speed to get it across your hard disk afterwards is amazing. You know, when you've had a shoot all day and you just dump 64 gig in 10 minutes, it's great.
Yeah, well, I guess one of the big things with CFast is a lot of video cameras are using it. So when you're using a CFast card in an SLR, it kind of automatically means you're going to have a big capacity. So gone, I think, are the days where you need 6 cards. You need at least 2, obviously, but probably not that many more for most circumstances because you're looking at, you know, starting points of 64 gig and then very quickly getting into 128 gig, 256, even 512 gig and shooting stills. You're never going to worry about that. You're going to be more worried about something happening to the card rather than running out of space, I think.
Yeah, but the CFast cards, as far as I'm aware, are engineered in a way where they're fairly robust cards. They're designed for the professional market.
Yep, apart from the hacks from Atomos for their devices. But moving on, the other thing about this camera, it's a speed demon, as all 1Ds have been. So we're talking 14 frames per second or 16 with the mirror up, so you can absolutely bust through those shots. The other nice thing is that it's 170 raw shots in the buffer, so you can absolutely machine gun it, and if you can't get your shot in the 170 frames, then you've probably got bigger problems. So, you know, 170 in the raw, I like that because you could have the bride coming down the aisle or someone running from one end of the field to the other and get pretty much every single step of the way almost holding down the shutter. So that's a nice sort of feature there. It's a 20 megapixel sensor. It was an 18, so it's not a high megapixel sensor. It's not meant to be. It's about the quality of those pixels rather than the number of them. Mm-hmm. So no real surprises in that respect. Canon are claiming that there's less heat and therefore less noise on this sensor, which is always a good thing as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that this sensor is going to be very clean.
Yeah.
Do you know who manufactures that sensor?
It is a Canon sensor.
It is a Canon sensor.
So it's their new generation of Canon sensors.
Is this their first flagship camera to have that new generation of
sensor? Yeah, well, first camera, full stop, I think. So
yeah,
I would expect the new 5D when that comes out to have it, but this is their new top of the pops. So the other interesting thing about it from a video perspective is its video recording abilities. So there was the 1DC,
at least we forget,
which was a 1D with a big heat sink on it, basically. It was a nice stills camera because it was a 1D, but it happened to shoot 4K as well, and you paid a lot more for that privilege. This one can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second, which is a bit of a trick up its sleeve because most of the other products out there are shooting 4K, but they're not doing it at 60 frames per second. So it's a good old 29 and 59 second rule just to get around those EU tax laws. So that's still a tiny issue, I guess, if you're shooting long form stuff. But people using this sort of camera, I don't think, are shooting, you know, big conferences and long form interviews and that sort of thing.
No, and the thing is here though, so they go for less than 30 minutes of record time, so it's not a professional camera. Yes, yeah. It records at 800 megabits per second
in 4K.
My God,
yes.
What kind of bit rate is this?
It's not professional at all.
No, that's unbelievable. That's actually quite exciting. I am absolutely hoping it's going to be a 10-bit format too. Do you know if it is?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
If it is a 10-bit format, which gives you the scope to color and even and shoot a flat profile. Wow, this thing is going to dominate. I don't know, but is it? We're not going
to
realize.
Find out. Yeah.
What stage is it at the moment? It's just announced.
It's announced. So beta testers have got it in their hands, probably Aussies, because we seem to be the country where you send your cameras to really test them out because we're two stops over, as the old saying goes. It's definitely out in the wild. It's definitely being tested. But, I don't think anyone else has got their hands in the pot apart from those lucky beta testers at this stage.
Wow. I'm looking forward to seeing this camera in action. I am a big fan of the high-end Canon, the 1DC especially.
Yeah.
Even though that was limited to 24 frames a second, I know people who are shooting stuff for PAL, shooting at 24 and speeding it up just because for B-roll and for cutaway, it just looks that
really
good.
Nice. Yeah.
It just, and with this new sensor, if they're really resolving that same.
Well, the dynamic range is meant to have gone up as well.
Oh, wow.
So.
Because that was always a killer. It just, you could smooth that DR off at the top and it's just a beautiful highlights.
Yep.
So this could be a camera that rivals your Reds and the like, you know. I'm going to put that call in there.
I had a demo of the Red Weapon last week and maybe not.
Oh, really?
It was pretty nice. So that's shooting 6K and upgrading to 8K and has some pretty nice features to it. So I think that's probably another step up. You're also talking more than five times the cost. Probably more like seven times the cost.
But as far as entry level,
yeah.
If you're talking something where you're going to finish at 4K,
yeah.
The only thing is that stabilization, it's nice to shoot over like 5 or 6K. But yeah, to recrop or reframe. But
yeah.
I'm going to make the call at this image sensor. This is going to be a very special camera for not only capturing photos, but video as well.
Mm. So speaking of capturing photos and video as well, they also announced while we're gone the Canon 80D. So this is the successor to the 70D and the successor before that to the 60D. So it's Canon's prosumer level camera. They also call the 5D a prosumer level camera, which many people would argue, but this is really in the prosumer space. It's like $1,200-ish body plus lenses, but it's a nice camera for those who want to get a bit more serious than maybe your entry level 700Ds, 750Ds, 760D, whatever they're up to now. So it's not that exciting in terms of the body itself, although it does have a few nice features. It's got 45 cross type AF points, which is a big step up for a prosumer level body. It's 24.2 megapixel APS-C sensor, so a smaller sensor than the 1D, but a pretty good megapixel count, I think, for this style of camera. In terms of the video, it's 1080p at 60 frames, no 4K on this one, and you've got built-in Wi-Fi and NFC, so nice if you want to shoot tethered without actually being tethered, I suppose, and you can pair it with your mobile phone and do all those sorts of things quite quite easily. But I think the most interesting or comical aspect of this camera, Chris, would be
the extended options that you can get for it.
Yes. So the first thing is the microphone that they've developed specifically for this camera, it would seem. It's the Canon DM-E directional mic, which is a little shotgun mic.
A stereo shoddy that sits on top of your camera. Now, the great thing would be is if, and this is what I've been waiting for, is if you could just slide it on and it was a hot shoe, just like the Sony, and it would just start recording. But no, it's got a jack on it.
A 3.5 jack.
Just kind of confuses me a bit. They're not using any kind of hot shoe system, so you still have to plug it in. I mean, these cameras, what would be amazing, especially for doco makers and people who want to, you know, get a cheap camera for running around with, is have one of these which you can actually record, you know, with a hot shoe on top and still have another two channels for, or a single channel for plugging a lapel mic or something in the side.
Mm.
Still haven't seen that. Mm. I mean,
and the thing with this is, why not just get the Rode, which is cheaper?
Or the Sennheiser.
And look, maybe this will be amazing in terms of sound quality, we don't know, but just on paper, there's nothing apart from the Canon branding on it that makes you really want to go out and get this mic.
Yeah. Look, until I've heard it, I'm not going to judge it, but it's a bit of a Canon value add that they can sort of sell at the store, I think. I think you'll see it heavily discounted at store
not
level. It looks pretty cheap. It doesn't look like it's particularly well built or anything. So
no. It's a bit like the Canon intervalometers that you pay $300 for, and the cheapo eBay job of $25. That's pretty much the same thing.
But, there's my favorite adapter, though, of all of them. There's a new Canon adapter about to come out called a PZ-E1 power zoom adapter. Now, this is almost so ridiculous that I can guarantee you'll probably never see one. I
kind of want to see one, though.
Yeah, I want to see one just to chuckle at it. It's a motorized zoom control, so you can zoom your lens in and out, just like a real video camera that sits on the bottom of the lens assembly and attaches, I assume, to the tripod mount of some sort. I mean, how does this even attach to the camera?
I think it must attach to the camera in some way. It's designed to work with a new lens, the EF-S 18-135 3.5-5.6 ISUSM blah, 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 blah lens, which is a new video continuous autofocus lens with a nice range, I suppose, from Canon. It's designed to be released with the 80D. And then you've got this little PZ-E1 mount for it, which basically it's a gear that basically just sticks into the manual focus ring, the manual zoom ring of the lens, and gives you a servo basically instead of your hand.
I don't know, I'm not sold on that. Unless it has smoothing, so it does really nice ramp downs and ramp ups.
Yeah.
If it has a really nice control, it'd be good. But just where it's located and stuff for the zoom, it just looks awkward to use. And it looks like something from the 70s, really.
Well, or
it's like having a motor drive,
all the 2000s,
on the bottom.
Late 2000s, where it was the SLR revolution, they've sort of packaged it as that 2.0. Which, hey, it's interesting. We'll see how we go. also, in stills mainly news, we've got the announcement from Sony, which is the new version of the Alpha A6300. Which I think looks like a pretty nice camera. Really, it's designed as a prosumer camera, but I think plenty of pros would be happy to have one of these in their bag. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I've played with the 6000 and I loved it. I was just shooting on it, finding I was getting great shots, just running around my friend's apartment with a single prime. I think we had the 35 Sony prime, and very capable lens. Very capable camera and sensor. Of course, interchangeable lens system, so you can choose any option from Sony you want. And this is the thing. I mean, Sony are starting to step up.
Yeah,
certainly
there's a bit
as
of an
far
infrastructure
as their lens
there.
Range. And other manufacturers are coming on board now, and that's the big thing that we're starting to see.
Yeah, you got Sigmas and stuff in there as well.
Yep, Sigmas down the sort of lower end, I guess, and Roikkonen and those guys. But then at the top, you've got the Zeiss Glass and things, which arguably you could say is a bit of overkill. But I don't think on a 6300, it would be an overkill, to be honest, because it's still an amazingly good camera. If you put a good piece of glass on this camera, it's a perfect super portable spare body for any of the higher end lenses. Even if you put the full frame lens on these bodies, they look fantastic.
Yeah, it won't be so portable once you do, but the body itself, I think, is quite impressive. It's an APS-C sensor, so you're going to get a bit of a crop factor there on any of those more professional lenses that you might mount. But the most impressive thing and the talking point on this particular camera is the autofocus system. It's a 425 or something phase detect autofocus points across the entire frame. There's a nice demo up on one of the Sony websites of a rally car coming flying around the corner, and they're showing how the autofocus system works on it. And it just looks intense. And the fact that it's across the frame is also really great. There's nothing more annoying than trying to get a bit of autofocus on a point where there isn't an autofocus crosshair to actually to get focus there. So it's a secondary camera or a travel camera or something like that, but it definitely looks pretty serious, especially when it comes to its autofocus system.
And certainly as a super mini doco camera, if you wanted to use it for cutaway, it does have the capability to shoot 4K, which is of course super handy at this point in time anyway, for reframing and to stabilize. And I mean, for the price, it's what, $1,000 it'll settle out at? Maybe it's about $1,200, I know.
Yeah, Australian, a little bit more, but yeah.
Yeah, but it'll settle out at a really nice entry. Certainly if you want something small. As you say, once you start adding the bigger lenses, it starts getting a bit chunkier. But I mean,
and a bit lopsided too.
Yeah, yeah, it is front heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. But when you're holding a camera and you're reaching for the zoom ring and things anyway, it sort of balances out okay.
Yeah.
As long as you're using the smaller lenses on it, it's there's a lot of options. And if you want to bang on a nice prime, you know, you can get a Sigma 19 for, $250-odd. You can get a Sony 35 for, $600. You could set yourself up for under $2,000 with, three good solid primes and a little shooter. If you wanted to just go out, have a portable shooter for taking really lovely beauty shots,
yeah,
you could definitely set yourself up for cheap.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of beauty shots, the 85 is a traditional beauty shot sort of lens. Tamron's released, or at least announced, an interesting one, because there are some other nice lenses at the 85mm mark. Canon's got the 1.2, there's a Sigma 1.4. This is a 1.8, so it's a little bit slower, but it does have an interesting feature, and that is that they've added VC or vibration compensation into this lens. So if you've drunk too much coffee or you're shooting video perhaps, this might be a nice addition to this style of lens.
And yeah, stabilization at 85 is something that's... You're really amplifying the movement in the camera at that point.
Yeah.
So if you're indoors and you're especially firing a whole lot of group shots and also like double shots or even portrait on the fly shots, it'd be perfect for that. The one thing to remember though is that yes, it will stabilize and it will make your shots a lot sharper, but your movement of the people, your subject, is still going to be an issue. The biggest problem you have once you start getting stabilized lenses, you're like, oh wow, I'm getting these shots, and you do test runs, in your room where you're shooting, your fruit bowl and your everything in your room and your garden gnomes, everything, going, wow, I'm shooting this at, half a second. Then you get someone in front of it in a live situation and they will move their head. They will.
Yeah.
Getting people to freeze perfectly is actually the hardest thing once you start, getting to the point where you're really using that VC. But as you say, still super impressive, and it's gonna save you, I reckon, a whole lot of headaches for that portrait on the fly stuff, especially in lower light where you wouldn't necessarily go 85mm. You might consider it now.
Well, yeah, look, I'd still probably, if this was a 1.4, I'd buy it. I'd still possibly go to the Sigma 1.4 for this style of lens at 85mm. If you're doing video, you'd definitely go for the Tamron. And there's rumours of a Sigma Art 85 coming out in the not-too-distant future, which would be very nice. But I would find, because going back to the movement thing, I think, Chris, at a wedding, for example, I wouldn't want to shoot at much less than 1/60. In fact, that'd probably be my absolute slowest.
Yeah.
And the good old rule of thumb is your focal length is your shutter speed. So, 85, you wouldn't go much slower than 85. Now, with vibration compensation, well, maybe you could, but the problem is if you go much slower, then people, as you say, are going
to
be moving.
Start to blur.
And even with the VC, you'll get a nice sharp backdrop. Yeah. But people are going to blur. So I don't know. I think maybe the little bit of extra light, a 1.4 on the 85mm would let in, might be more advantageous for what I do. But I can definitely see it for people shooting video and people shooting stuff in sort of medium to reasonable light, it definitely being a nice lens.
Hmm. I'm curious, what I think it would be really nice for, honestly, is if you were shooting full frame video where you were going a little bit tighter on a slider or something like that, that compensation would just get that tiny little bit of judder and rumble you sometimes get on your, even when you set your slider up well, sometimes you do get a little bit of travel bump, and that would, anything you can do at an optical level before you take it in digital in my world is a good thing. So I mean, as they're also announcing it for Sony. Interestingly, it's Nikon, it's Canon, but the Sony's coming later. And a lot of brands seem to be doing this. They'll support Sony, but they're kind of almost like, wait to see how sales go.
We'll deal with that later. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other lens announcement from Tamron, I'm a little confused by, and maybe someone can write in and tell us what the real reasoning for this lens is. It's the Tamron SP 90mm macro lens. It's a 2.8 lens, and you might think, well, what's wrong with that? That sounds like a decent lens. And it does, except Tamron have already got two 90mm 2.8 macro lenses. I have one of them at work. I haven't used it that much, but it seems pretty nice. It's the higher-end version of those two lenses. I'm not sure if they're replacing one of those lenses, or this is a third 90mm 2.8 macro. That seems like a lot of 90mm 2.8 macros to have in your arsenal, but I think it would be a good lens. I just don't quite see why that was what they went with.
I think the word here is macro. You know, that they've probably got something just with the way their bokeh works or something that happens at that low level that's really looking nice. I'd without having it in my hand and being able to compare to a previous one.
Yeah, it's a bit hard.
I mean, a macro lens is a really good. We used one a week ago on a shoot for a company doing a whole load of sand vibrating off the top of a product, and it just picked up the light in a really beautiful way. That was actually using a Canon I think it was an 85 or what's the Canon?
The 100 perhaps.
It was a 100. Yeah. And that really, really, especially at macro mode, just picked up this beautiful, you know, stunning details that were just, you know, in that half inch of focus. Yeah. So, people love that look. But there's a lot of options already out there.
With the macro world. But look, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
That's just weird that you got three from Tamron themselves. But anyway, going back to zoom lenses, there's also from Sigma the 50-100 1.8 Art. And yes, you heard that right. It was a 50-100 1.8, which is
consistent.
Interesting. Yeah, consistent. Now, the reason they're able to do this is because it's an APS-C style lens. It won't work on a full frame body. But if you're shooting, you know, on a 7D perhaps, or the Nikon equivalent, or the Sony equivalent, I suppose. Look, it sounds like a really interesting lens to have in your arsenal. It's probably the equivalent of a 70-150, which is a pretty useful focal length. In fact, I probably shoot most of my photos in that focal length range. And to have that at 1.8, well, that's better than 2.8.
And it's an art series, so
it should be.
It's got their stamp of better quality glass on it.
Stamp of approval with the art, yeah.
Mind you, I've never had a problem with the Sigma lens. I've always thought they've been quite good.
Yeah, look,
my DX30 is the best lens of any kind of primes. One of the best lenses I've ever used. It's amazing.
Yeah, look, I think Sigma definitely had their problems back in the day, but in the last few years, they've made lots of concerted efforts to make sure there's consistent quality. I think there was always quality, but it was a bit of a lucky dip. Sometimes you got the quality and sometimes you didn't, and it was pretty upsetting when you didn't. However, I think lately, especially with the Art line, they've made leaps and bounds in terms of getting a consistent level of quality out there in the marketplace.
They're the underdog, Sigma, really. They've got some great products.
Tamron, yeah.
And
I think Sigma's winning at the moment, but Tamron's also, I think, punching above their weight as well at the moment. So they're both doing pretty well, which is good because Canon seems to be charging a lot of money for their glass lately, and we need that competition.
Yeah. And, you know, it is hard to get pieces of... I mean, people say, oh, well, it can't cost you that much to, you know, grind a piece of, when you're making hundreds and thousands of them. But the actual raw materials and the raw grade of glass and all the quality they have to go through to actually test and make sure that the, you know, the bits of glass are pure and everything, there's a lot of manual intervention.
Yeah. And Sigma actually put a lot of videos from their factories online, and you have look at the process, and there's a lot of human interaction. This isn't just rolling off a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Every step of the way, someone's picking the piece of glass or metal or electronics up and looking at it, inspecting it, and putting it together pretty much by hand. So it's not a cheap process, and it's done in countries a lot of the time where the labor isn't that cheap as well.
Mm. because you really need people who have got the understanding if something goes wrong, or, you know, if they need to reshine things or repolish them. And there's a lot of responsibilities to make sure that that goes out with top quality, which, yeah, good on them for, you know, putting a lot of promotion material out there. We might get in touch with some of these companies in the future and try to ask to chat to someone about these kind of things, because, you know, it's having an insight into how your lens is actually made, I think, is quite an interesting thing.
Definitely.
You take it for granted the some of the technology, even coatings and things like that, that go into these.
These new coatings that repel oil and dust and water and all that sort of stuff. It's pretty
And also reflections. I mean, you know, I know when we were shooting yesterday, there was some LEDs on a product, and it was obviously bouncing inside of the lens and flipping it upside down. And we sort of had a mirror image because they were really bright blue LEDs. Mm. And we switched to another lens, and we realized at that point how good our Canon lens was with its coatings, because it just came out like absolute dog's balls, which is a ridiculous amount of reflection. So every lens has its, you know, internal refraction and reflection management, and it's an art, absolute art, to making lenses.
Definitely.
So we'll definitely look at that in the future. Hey.
Yeah, I know you're quite excited about this one, Chris. So I'm going to let you talk, because I've been talking quite a lot today, and I know you're very excited about this particular announcement from Sony, and that is the new Sony PXW-Z150 XD Cam Professional Camcorder, or as I like to call it, the exciting, boring camera.
The exciting, boring. Hey, it is. It's, look, Sony have put their 150 mark on it. Let's go back a bit. Let's go back, 14 years. When the Sony PD150 came out. Now, this is going back a fair bit for you, for people out there who are uninitiated. The PD150 was the shooter. It was the camera that everyone could afford that had a super amount of battery life. It had great lens built in, good audio options. It had buttons for everything that you could get to. It was a smaller form factor. It was kind of the first of that smaller prosumer cameras that was a step up from a kind of something that was a compromise. Yes, it still ran DV tapes, but it was, you know, it was a pretty impressive piece of kit. What's really exciting is this camera has a really lovely sensor in it, and that, yes, it is a smaller sensor than its, you know, its bigger counterparts such as the F5 and the F3 and the 55 and things like that. But it shoots 4K. It has a fantastic built-in lens, so that it's an all-in-one. It's not a removable lens system or anything like that, but it's a really nice Zeiss piece of glass that they've re-engineered, as far as I'm aware. It's Sony branded, but from what I've read, the research that's gone into this lens has been quite epic. Shoots 120 frames a second in HD, only shoots 30 frames a second in 4K, or 25 or 24, but I think we're still going for that look at the moment.
Yeah, and look, the hardware's just not there yet. It'd be great if it shot 120 in 4K, but, you know, as soon as you get up there, you start to lose quality. The codecs on many of these cameras start to fall apart. Even if you're shooting on some of the RED cameras, as soon as you push up the frame rate, you start to lose picture quality. So I'm not sure it's a good trade-off at this stage.
Yeah. So as you say, this camera is designed as a workhorse. It is an exciting, boring camera. It is kind of what you would get if you asked for everything in a camera.
You can have one camera and one
You can have one camera at a decent price. And this is the thing. I mean, the Panasonic have got their
The DVX200.
And the DVX200 is arguably probably slightly more options as far as your depth of field.
It's got a bigger sensor.
Got a bigger sensor. It's got a lens system that's kind of probably going to be on par, but it's going to give you, I think, a little bit more range as well.
No, I think it's actually the same. I have to double check. I think it is the same range. But I think, yeah, look, the sensor's going to give you some things, but the Sony stabilization-wise has traditionally probably been a bit better. You'd have to see them side by side.
Yeah.
They're quite similar cameras.
So, yeah, as a camera, I'm going to buy one of these. And the reason I'm going to buy one is because it has a fantastic zoom range on it. It's one of those pretty much reach everything, especially on the long end. You can push right the way to 350mm equivalent, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whether it'll stabilize out an image at that point, I'm not sure. But I mean, the current Z5 that I still use from time to time manages okay. The X1 manages fine. So I can imagine this thing will as well. Built-in ND filters, so you can flip them in and out. Yeah. It really is just, it's like a Z5 or a EX1 or a, what are the recent ones that have come out from Sony? I sort of skipped them.
I've sort of skipped them to.
Yeah, but the one with the really complicated name, EH.
Well, the ZNEXEA50H.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a weird camera. I like it for some reasons. I hate it for other reasons.
But this, I've always said that the PD150 had it right. That form factor, which everything with your fingers and the right button. It's one of those, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of attitude cameras. Yep. And I think this is what they've done. They've gone, well, what do people currently want? What does a prosumer currently want, to use that word? I know it's a terrible, dirty word, but this is really it. Mm. My only complaint is that the 4K that it shoots isn't necessarily in 10-bit.
Yeah,
they are saying that there isn't a S-Log mode, but I think there is. If you actually go into the picture profile modes and play around, there is actually a mode, as far as I'm aware, that will allow you to bring up an S-Log option. So it's very similar to the RX10 as far as the menu system. I was looking at a demonstration of it, and it looked almost identical. So I can almost imagine what's going to be in there already. The biggest thing with this camera is it also has Wi-Fi in it for streaming. So
yeah, and I used to think Wi-Fi was one of those stupid, wanky, pointless features, and it was. But now it's getting a little bit more robust, and the fact that you can actually do more than just use your phone to download pictures. You can actually control the iris, you can control the white balance, and you can actually stream out a video signal. It's starting to get to the point where it's actually quite useful.
So this, and I don't know if this is a scenario where you might be able to do this, but I'm guessing it's the kind of thing where you would be able to do an interview somewhere on a location, tether your phone to the camera.
Yeah, for news.
And actually have somebody sit in and watch the interview live while you're doing it and take some notes and actually sort of send it and record it at the other end as well, plus your side, and archive it. That could be pretty helpful. I mean, we can do this already, stuffing around with a lot of boxes and playing around, but the fact you can do that in camera just makes this thing a very functional camera.
Yeah,
as you say, it's exciting at the same time as being boring. It's nothing new, but
it's everything that you've always wanted.
It's everything that's current that you wish you just had in one camera. So, look, I mean, we could sit and talk a lot about this camera, but I think it's going to be a winner. And it's got a nice little flip-out screen on it as much, and a nice OLED
SDI as well, because traditionally, as you know, Chris, with the Z7P, the Z5, they only had HDMI, and SDI was always missing. I like the fact that now you can get SDI in most... Well, anything that's even slightly professional seems to have SDI these days, which is important.
Yeah. And
also,
the
most important bit's got RCA.
Yeah.
Because occasionally you just want a bloody video signal and you don't want to dick around with other things, and it's good to have RCA still on a camera.
It certainly is, especially for that moment where you've got a spare screen on set and it's got a TV input or something like that.
Just a TV. It's great.
Now, the reason why SDI is exciting as well is there's a few reasons. One of them is that HDMI sockets, traditionally, if you use them under any kind of stressful use, after a while, they just die. They easily break. I've broken
or
three.
Or they don't break, and they seem like they're working, and then you wonder what the hell's going on with your video signal, and it turns out it's dodgy. It just wasn't clearly dodgy.
Yeah. And it's touchy. And
You just gently blow on it and it works, and then suddenly someone walks across the room and it stops working. Yeah. SDI doesn't do that.
Yeah, SDI is very much plug and lock. And it's great that now that's coming to the prosumer grade market, because really we've wanted it for years. It's been a mystery that it's never been there. SDI doesn't really have any intellectual property that costs any money to manufacture
for. It's been around since the 80s. So.
Yeah, and it's a standard that's locked down, and it was always designed as a robust protocol, but just the cameras didn't employ it. It was really, and HDMI actually costs more, as far as I'm aware.
Well, back in the days of early XD cams, you had I forget the exact model, but it was the 330 and the 350 were the end of the model names. And the 350 had the SDI, and that was, I think, a $30,000 camera, and the 330 had component, and that was $26,000. So you used to pay a premium for it, and it was a big differentiator. But now I think they've given up on that, which is good.
I think they've just realized it stops them from getting returns and complaints and warranty issues if they just give them an SDI output.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
That's a good thing. I'm pretty excited about this camera. So yeah, the Sony PXW Z150, or it'll just be known as probably Z150 or the 150, I'd say, or the 150 if you're in our office.
Yeah. Anyway,
so,
Chris.
Yeah, we'll let you know when we've got one, what we think of it.
And, we do have some beers to try, except we can't do it in this very nice studio because I'm clumsy and I might make a mess. So we're going to step outside. The sound quality is about to drop, but bear with us because there's some interesting beers.
All right, so beers for this week. We've just gone to the kitchenette for a bit of a beer mission.
All right.
What have we got?
Ooh. We've got the Three Circus Pub Hairy Mary. Well, it's featuring Hairy Mary. It's the pale ale.
Who's Hairy Mary?
I don't know, but we're about to drink her.
She sounds like a nightmare for the makeup department. It's 5.1, so it's got a little bit of curry to it.
A little bit dry after this, so we'll only be having one today.
I've got to go to train station. And, oh, actually, I told my friend to jump on the bus from the airport to come here so we could do the podcast.
All right,
let's have a shot.
Well, it's a hot day here in Melbourne, and this goes down quite nicely.
That's really non-offensive. It's almost fruity.
It's high praise, really not offensive.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, that's a really nice... It's almost got a zesty kind of edge to
it. Yeah, at the start of it.
Yeah, and then it kind of mellows out and sits really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely taste the hair in there.
The Hairy Mary. It's quite a nice label. It looks like a stamp from the 40s.
Yeah. This is a really good... So, yeah, the Hairy Mary Pale Ale by Three Pub Circus Australia. So where are Three Pub from? Do you know anything about the Three Pub Brewing Company?
I don't. I just grabbed something off the shelf and thought we'd give it a go.
Yeah, okay. So, well, they are from Hawthorne. No.
No.
Surely not.
Hawthorne East.
That's where you just come
down
from.
The road. Oh, geez, all right.
Is this a local market?
I'll have to go and visit Hairy Mary.
Okay, well, is there a way you can visit them?
I don't know. I'm going to find out now.
But it has IBU and EPC. It's almost EBU.
Okay. Anyway, I'll buy that again.
Yeah, that's not bad. So there we go. The Hairy Mary Pale Ale by Three Pub Circus.
All right,
John. Well, it's been a good show. Thanks, guys, for hanging in there. We've had some very busy times in our lives recently, but that leads to a lot of experience. And we'll probably talk about some of these in the weeks to come. I mean, there's been... 44 interviews. I was doing 8-9 interviews and cutaway for 9 different subjects a day at one point.
Mm.
So knocking over stuff like that, we had to think on our feet. You've been what?
That wedding that we did. We've edited the photos, cut some video, and back to the 9-to-5 and a bit of teaching. So it's been busy times.
The 100 frames a second experiment.
Yes, worked quite well.
I'm glad that worked quite well.
A lot of clients were happy, so that's all you want.
I was just worried when I suddenly started running around at 100 with the stabilizer on and realized the stabilization tool actually works differently in the camera.
At
100 than it does at 50 or 25. These are all little things that you don't realize until you're out there.
Not in the manual, or at least you don't read them because, they're all technical things that you don't meet until you meet them.
That's right. But that's why we have the Purple Fringe, and we'll be discussing this and much more in the weeks to come.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. Enjoy.